If anyone wants to sit down, we have a large agenda today. We are going to be skipping around in the agenda as people who are coming from long distances and things like that to speak about certain bills. For those of you who are here for Senate Bill 700, that bill will not be a public hearing. That will be a work session only. We will not take public testimony. The letter I received asking for action on the bill specifically asked for a work session, not a public hearing. So we are going to do a work session only. So we will get to that bill today. With that, we will open a... We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 451.
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 451 is a bill that allows homeowner associations to file their association with the county clerk. State law limits what county clerks can record, and this adds them to the list of documents that can be filed and recorded, and then it gives that the same status as other real estate transactions that can be filed with the county clerk.
Thank you very much. As soon as we get a sign-up sheet, we'll find out who is our first. Francine Cushman, Senator Bryant. Oh, she's right here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Chair Byer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Francine Cushman. I'm here representing Senator Neil Bryant. Senator Bryant, just as a formality, really, we wanted Mr. Patterson's testimony. Duly noted, he is an elderly gentleman from Central Oregon, unable to make it over the past day. Senator Bryant, just wanted to let you know that the bill passed through the Senate side with relative ease and no problems. He encourages your support, and that Mr. Patterson encourages your support as well.
Thank you very much.
That's all we want to say.
We have been handed a written testimony from Mr. Patterson. Is there any questions or witnesses? Witness? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 451? Okay, no one will oppose a public hearing. Senate Bill 451. Open a work session. Bill 451.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 451. Gross to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Knope moves Senate Bill 451 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Atkinson?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Representative Knope?
Aye.
Representative Lundquist?
Aye.
Representative Moisette?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Chair Byer?
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, Senate Bill 451 goes before the due pass recommendation, and Representative Knope will carry the bill. The session is closed. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 591. Sutman, I can give us a brief introduction.
Mr. Chairman, this bill has to do with who can be a self-insured employer group for purposes of workers' comp. Currently, the law restricts those groups to people in the same industry. This bill repeals that limitation of the same industry requirement that's in the law now. And in the Senate, it was 23-3 vote.
Thank you. Rob Douglas and Dave Garth.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Rob Douglas, representing the Oregon Self-Insurers Association. Senate Bill 591 was introduced by the Senate Committee on Public Affairs at our request. To my right is Joe McLaughlin, and to my left is Dave Scherer. Before I give the testimony over to them, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to point out the only change this bill makes appears on the first page, line 24, and we are taking four words out of current statute. Those four words are in the same industry. I would like to emphasize, Mr. Chair, that all the other requirements to become a self-insured group apply. And Mr. Chair and Mr. McLaughlin will go into technicalities on that.
Morning.
Morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is David Scherer. I'm a senior vice president with Sedgwick. We are the state's largest insurance brokerage firm, and we're also involved in third-party claims administration for self-insured employers. As Rob indicated, today I'm testifying on behalf of the Oregon Self-Insurers Association, which represents many of the state's leading employers as well as employer groups. We view passage of Senate Bill 591 as an equity measure which will level a playing field with respect to group workers' compensation programs in the state. A little background on this bill. The self-insured workers' compensation groups have been permitted in Oregon for many years. Currently, five self-insured employer groups are qualified with the Workers' Compensation Division. The statute governing group self-insurance permits group self-insurance for five or more subject employers in the same industry. There are a number of other qualifying criteria that must be met, but the issue we are addressing today is the same industry requirement of the current law. When the 1990 special session overhauled our comp system, Senate Bill 1198 eliminated the homogeneous group requirements for insured groups. A similar change for self-insured groups was overlooked. In the intervening 9 years, several major heterogeneous groups have flourished, including the Liberty Northwest Bitter Business Alliance, Associated Oregon Industries, and Cascade Employers Association. These three groups alone account for more than $100 million in premium for Liberty Northwest and SAFE. The success of these insured heterogeneous groups should provide ample assurance of the long-term viability of a heterogeneous group of employers. There are currently several exceptions to the heterogeneous group rules in our current statute. I believe Joe McLaughlin will expand on his involvement with these groups here in a minute. Looking at other states, group self-insurance is permitted in most states. Though regulations vary from state to state, many states permit heterogeneous groups. At least 15 states allow heterogeneous groups in one form or another, and these include Alabama, Connecticut, Florida, Kentucky, Missouri, North Carolina, New Mexico, and Virginia, just to name a few. In summarizing our position on this, the ultimate destiny of any group will be decided by its loss experience. Loss control, claims management, medical management, and employee relations all play key roles in determining workers' compensation experience. Another factor is competition. The passage of Senate Bill 591 will not only provide equity amongst service sectors, it will also improve the competitive environment of our workers' compensation industry. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions at this time? President Morissette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many cities, counties, special districts are involved in self-insurance for workers' comp? Do you have any idea?
Joe, I think Mr. McLaughlin probably has a better answer than me for that.
There are probably the exact number, I don't know. With workers' compensation, there are over 230 cities in the group, 15 counties in the city-county program, and I would guess close to 300 of the special districts are in their program.
You know, can you state your name, please?
Joe McLaughlin.
Thank you very much.
That includes the city of Springfield.
Further questions? You have more testimony?
Yes, sir, I do.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joseph McLaughlin. I'm vice president and one of the owners of Self-Insured Management Services, one of the state's largest independent insurance claims administrators. Prior to my involvement with Self-Insured Management Services, I was the sales director for a national claims administrator that was involved in the formation of self-insured groups throughout the United States. The purpose of my presence today is to offer testimony on behalf of the Oregon Self-Insurers Association bill to allow heterogeneous groups to self-insure workers' compensation in the state of Oregon. Although statutes prohibit these groups, several exceptions currently exist. These exceptions are found under ORS 656-430, and they include cities, counties, special districts, intergovernmental agencies, and public housing authorities. I was personally involved in the development of the group self-insurance program for the Special Districts Association of Oregon. This group has been very successful, a very successful qualified self-insured group since 1988, and comprises many unrelated activities such as hospital districts, sewer districts, fire districts, 9/11 emergency districts, water districts, and irrigation districts. In addition, the City County Insurance Service also operates a very successful self-insured group that has been in existence since 1986. Our firm is the claims administrator for both of these groups, and I can personally attest to their successful operations. Other exceptions also exist and are permitted by statute in another area. Oregon law allows temporary services and employee leasing companies to self-insure, provided they meet all of the qualifying standards. There are currently two qualified self-insured employers in this category, Gold Dust and Barrett Business Services. Our company handles the Barrett account, which represents hundreds of employers in Oregon, operates in more than 400 workers' compensation class codes, and has been successfully self-insured for over 12 years. They are the dominant employee leasing firm in the state and accept a wider range of class codes than most traditional insurers would underwrite. The passage of Bill 591 would allow all employers in Oregon to enjoy the same advantages that up to now have been available only through individual legislation.
Thank you very much. Further questions? Thank you very much, gentlemen, for moving forward. Lisa Trussell and Jennifer Miller.
Good morning. I'm Chair Byer, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Miller. I'm here on behalf of Special Districts Insurance Services, which is part of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. We have about 600 districts in the state and employ several thousand employees. As was previously mentioned, about 300 of the 600 special districts are part of the exception under ORS 56-430 and are actively using that. We support the bill. We think it's a very good policy concept. It gives people alternatives for insurance, and we support that.
Thank you. Questions?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Lisa Trussell with Associated Oregon Industries, and I'm here today to lend support to Senate Bill 591. We believe it enhances the freeway system and provides further options for purchasing the coverage.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you for coming forward this morning. I forgot to ask you a little question. Maybe you touched on your testimony or someone did and I missed it. Why the emergency clause?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure why the emergency clause is there.
Not a very good answer.
That's my answer. I do not remember. It came back that way, and we accept that there is no technical emergency. There are not a lot of people rushing to make this change. You still have the underwriting factors, whether or not the group is viable, all the other requirements.
Good questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 591? Seeing no one, will close the public hearing. Open work session, Senate Bill 591.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 591 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
President Knope moves Senate Bill 591 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. President Thompson, do you have a comment?
Nope, I was just going to move it if he didn't.
Okay. For the discussion. I guess my only comment would be whoever is carrying this bill, you're going to have to figure out a good answer for when the question gets asked on the floor, why there's an emergency clause.
I mean, you're going to ask it?
Because invariably it will be asked. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Representative Knope?
Aye.
Representative Lundquist?
Aye.
Representative Marsette?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative Atkinson?
Yes.
Chair Byer?
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, Senate Bill 591 moves the board to due pass recommendation. Mr. Thompson, would you like to carry the bill?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, answer all the hard questions.
Work session is closed. We'll now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 592. ready, will give us a brief introduction.
Mr. Chairman, this bill requires that the procedure for levying assessments on insurers for workers' comp premiums, those assessments be done under rule. Currently, the law gives the discretionary authority to the director of DCBS. This would put it under Administrative Procedures Act.
Thank you. Rob Douglas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rob Douglas, representing the Oregon Self-Insurers Association. This bill was introduced by the Senate Committee on Public Affairs at the request of the Self-Insurers Association. Your committee administrator is correct. Traditionally, what has happened is the premium assessment has been announced through the form of a directive from the department, and that was it. No effective appeal, no chance to have a public discussion whereby those people who actually pay the assessment participate in that discussion. Senate Bill 592 simply subjects the premium assessment to rulemaking under the State Administrative Procedures Act. We've worked pretty hard and long with the department, and we feel this is a good solution.
Thank you. Questions of the committee? Very much. No emergency clause, I see.
Not on this one, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on Senate Bill 592? Seeing no one, we'll public hearing, open court session on Senate Bill 592.
Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 592 to the floor for the due pass recommendation.
President Finot, move Senate Bill 592 to the floor as a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion. We'll call the roll.
Representative Finot.
Aye.
Representative Lundquist.
Aye.
Representative Morissette.
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative Atkinson?
Yes.
Representative Gardner?
Aye.
Chair Beyer?
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, Senate Bill 592 moves forward as a due pass recommendation. Discussion on carrier. Getting ahead behind myself here. Representative Atkinson, will you have a voice for them?
Yes.
Representative Atkinson will carry the bill. Close the And now we're going to go to Senate Bill 220. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 220. Mr. Buck.
Three things, Mr. Chairman. This bill has a fiscal impact. That statement should have been in your packet. Secondly, there are conflict amendments on this bill. And what those conflict amendments do, and I'll pass them out to you, is simply recognize the fact that earlier we passed Senate Bill 460, which removed some sunset provisions in workers' comp law. This makes this law correspond to what we did with Senate Bill 460, the conflict amendments, and I'll pass those out. Third, what this bill does is gets the Department of Consumer and Business Services out of the business of closing workers' comp claims. Insurers now have the ability to do that themselves. Some 70 or so odd percent, I think, actually do that. This just gradually doesn't phase them out. It gets them out of the business by June 2001.
Thank you. Tom Mathis? And you can pass up these amendments. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for the honor.
Before you get started, I want to point out to the committee that there is a fiscal, but you'll notice it is a negative fiscal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tom Mattis. I'm the Deputy Administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division. Senate Bill 220 is a part of the department's continuing effort to streamline the way it does its business. What the bill proposes to do is to get the Workers' Compensation Division out of the business of closing workers' compensation claims. We believe these are claims processing duties which should be carried out by insurers just as they do all of their claims processing activities. Under the current law, when a worker's attending physician finds that the worker has become medically stationary, that is, they've recovered from the injury as much as possible, or the injury is no longer the major cause of the worker's disability, the worker's claim is closed. And at this closure, several things happen. First of all, there's a verification that the worker was properly paid or determined the proper amount of time and amount of money the worker should receive during the period of temporary disability. The worker's claim is examined and the amount of permanent disability is determined or impairment rated. And finally, there's an amount, an award ordered paid to that worker as compensation for that permanent disability. Now, we've had a role in closing claims since the inception of the workers' compensation system some 80 years ago. But over the last decade, insurers have had the statutory right to choose whether to close claims or to send them to the department. And they may choose to close this claim but not that claim, or close most claims or claims of a certain kind, or send some to us because they've had a change in personnel. They have the complete control over that election. But over time, the amount of claims closed by insurance companies has increased tremendously, and now they're closing about 75% of all workers' compensation claims, and it ranges as high as 98% in the case of Safe Corporation. What this bill does is eliminates the insurer's option to choose and makes them solely responsible for rating impairment, closing all claims, and for the reclassification of non-disabling injuries. And during the biennium, the next biennium, we would provide training and technical assistance to insurers who haven't closed claims before to help them with that transition and augment our claims processing on it to ensure that they comply with the law and the rules governing claims processing. The bill has evolved over time in a fairly interesting fashion. This first came out of our, about 2 years ago, out of our internal processes looking at what we were doing and how we could do our job better. It was then brought before the Management Labor Advisory Committee as a concept, and they agreed in concept. And then we also had an audit by the Secretary of State, a performance audit that we requested. And one of their findings was that this particular concept had merit. So the bill that's before you reflects a lot of the discussion that went on before the Management Labor Advisory Committee, and is probably notable as much for what's not in the bill as what is in the bill. There were a number of concerns expressed by insurers which do not now close claims, primarily rooted in a fear of the unknown since they've never done it, but primarily a fear of being penalized if they didn't do it correctly. There's other insurers that did not want to assume the administrative cost of closing claims. Others are reluctant to give up their ability to appeal the closure of a claim, which they can do now, because if they did their own closure, they wouldn't then turn around and appeal their own closure of a claim. And that has to do with the concern that they have about how do they counter findings of impairment by attending physician that they don't agree with. They're also concerned about the lack of clarity in the laws for what insurers are to do when impairment findings by the attending physician are not clear. The Management Labor Advisory Committee, both internally and with input from the public, discussed and debated these issues, but they were not successful in reaching agreement on some additional amendments to the bill. However, we recognize these concerns are quite real, and so we intend to follow these throughout the interim to report, collect information, and report to MLIC on a regular basis as we implement the bill, and also work with MLIC and other interested parties to solve those problems. And it may be that over time, as insurers gain some additional experience, some of those concerns will drop off. Representatives of organized labor were also concerned that WCD hold insurers accountable for the proper closure of claims and the accurate rating of permanent disability. We share that concern. It's a central part of our job to monitor claims processing by insurers. We extensively audit claims processing performance now, and we would augment our audit processes to do that with this bill's passage. The fiscal impact statement, which calls for elimination of the evaluation unit which closes claims by the end of the biennium, also calls for the addition of two auditors to our field audit unit to expand that unit so it can take on this responsibility, and these are contained in a policy package in our proposed budget. Labor also sought a transition period which would allow that insurers would be sufficiently prepared to close claims properly and allow a smooth phase out of the operations and employees that are affected in the Workers' Compensation Division. The June 30, 2001 phase-out date found in Section 16 reflects an agreement that we reached with the Service Employees International Union and the Governor's Office, and since we reached that agreement some weeks ago, it's been clear that that date actually is better than what we originally envisioned because it allows for a smoother, a longer period of time to make sure the insurers are properly trained and to develop our audit processes, as well as phase out staff. As I mentioned, the bill was supported by Secretary of State in concept and by the Management Labor Advisory Committee. The fiscal impact, because of the phase-out, takes place over a full 24-month period and there's the need to gear up for the transition, there will be a modest budget reduction of a little over $370,000 for the next biennium. But the going-forward cost avoidance for the 2001-2003 biennium and beyond is about $1.7 million per biennium. 19 FTE are eliminated and 2 are created, which are the auditors to help us with monitoring compliance. Given the extensive discussions we've had with the parties involved, the Management Labor Advisory Committee, the endorsement of both that committee and the Secretary of State, our commitment to work with the industry and hold them accountable, we believe that this is a sound public policy proposal, and for those reasons, we respectfully request that the committee send the bill to the floor with a due path recommendation. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Questions and witnesses. Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 220? Hearing no one, will close the public hearing and open work session on Senate Bill 220.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the dash A4 amendment, Senate Bill 220.
Representative Gardner moves the dash A4 amendments in the Senate Bill 220. Discussion? Objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Gardner.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate Bill 220 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gardner moves Senate Bill 220 as amended to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on the motion? Seeing none, clerk, call the roll.
Representative Lunsford.
Aye.
Representative Marquez.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Representative Atkinson.
Yes.
Representative Gardner.
Aye.
Representative
Knoll?
Aye.
Chair Byers?
Aye. Having received the required number of votes, Senate Bill 220 moves to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation. Any volunteers, Representative Morissette, would you carry that bill? Representative Morissette will carry the bill. Morissette is closed. We'll now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 654. Open a public hearing. Mr. Huntland, when you get ready, you can.
I don't know.
Some paper for fast reaction, if you got 654. Is that what I said? Well, that's what I
said. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 654 also has conflict amendments of the same type we just saw on 220. It recognizes the passage of Senate Bill 460, and I'll pass those out in just a second. What this bill does is has the governor appoint the chairperson of the Workers' Compensation Board, has that chairman supervise the board and its hearings division. Let's see. Currently, those responsibilities are, I'll say, diffused or undifferentiated. They belong to the entire board. This puts accountability or responsibility on that governor-appointed chair of the board.
Thank you. On our sign-up sheet, we have Jennifer Weber and Randy Homer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, and committee members.
For the record, I am Jennifer Weber, representing the Oregon Workers' Compensation Attorneys, and with me is Randy Elmer, an attorney in practice here in Salem. The Oregon Workers' Compensation Attorneys did not oppose Senate Bill 654 as it was originally written. However, we do oppose it in its amended version that is before you today. Our specific concerns with the bill is that it allows the chair of the board to terminate an administrative law judge rather than sending the complaint over to the Employment Relations Board for final termination. Just a little background on this issue, because we believe that that does give undue power over ALJs to the board chair and that it really overtly politicizes the hearings division. The workers' compensation ALJs are a direct replacement for the circuit court in deciding workers' compensation cases. When they were put into place, the independence and impartiality of the ALJs as decision makers was statutorily protected and insulated from bureaucratic tampering. Proponents of the changes in the bill argue that this treats ALJs like ALJs in other departments, but they are different and they should remain so. As I mentioned, not only are the ALJs a replacement of a circuit court jury trial for workers' compensation disputes, but they are a disinterested party to the workers' compensation cases. The department is not a party in the case being decided as it is in other departments. ALJs in other departments are finders of fact in an issue, and they act on behalf of the department director. The director can agree or disagree with what the ALJ finds in those cases and give input into the decision. However, workers' compensation ALJs are concluders of law rather than finders of fact. They're actually making a judgment in a case as to what the law should be. Their decisions are appealed up to the Workers' Compensation Board, so they must be able to maintain their judicial independence from that board that can overturn their decisions. And that's why we believe that having the chairperson of the Workers' Compensation Board have the ability to terminate an ALJ diminishes this independence greatly. We had some amendments drafted by legislative counsel that would undo exactly what we're talking about in the bill. They didn't come out as exactly as we needed them to, but what we proposed would be very simple on pages 7 and 8 of the bill, simply to restore the removed language in section 8, 3, sub C and D, restore the language that has been deleted from the statute. And I have my testimony written. I'll give it to the committee. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee?
Oh.
Yes, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, as Jennifer mentioned, my name is Randy Elmer. I've been practicing workers' compensation law and representing claimants for 16 and a half years. The last 2.5 years I've been serving as president of OWACA, and we are the attorneys in Oregon that represent claimants, 88 members strong presently. I can't emphasize enough how important it is to look at the history of the workers' comp board and its referees and now ALJs. It, as Jennifer mentioned, came out of what was statutorily a circuit court process. And then it was given to the board to have referees for a number of years. They're now administrative law judges. And another important point of this history that I'd like the committee to recognize is that for years, our Workers' Comp Act required that appointments of ALJs took into consideration that those the board members represented constituencies. There was the public member, a labor member, and a management member. And what that created was a fairly politicized body. In other words, here we have what's essentially an appellate court that feels they have a constituency to answer to. And we eliminated that in 1995 as part of Senate Bill 369. We wanted to eliminate the politicalization of the board. However, the sentiment still lingers there is still a perception, at least by some of us that practice, that that feeling that they have a constituency lingers. And you can see where is it, if a member of the board feels they have a constituency to answer to or is politicized, putting the control over the ALJs in their hands could be a dangerous thing. And we would like that not to happen, to preserve the judicial independence of those ALJs who act very much still like circuit court judges. Thank you. Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Maureen Baugh. Brad Witt, you want to come up together? Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Mark Gibson, Governor's Policy Advisor for Healthcare and Human Resources, and I apologize, at the back of the room I was having trouble hearing whether or not you had asked me to come up, and
I don't have your name on the list, but it is now.
I apologize for that. I thought we'd gotten that taken care of earlier. Maureen and I actually had testified together before the Senate committee that heard this bill, and I wanted to take the opportunity to appear before you and appreciate the opportunity to do that. The governor is supporting Senate Bill 654 in its current form. I think there's really been no secret of some of the problems that we've had in the Workers' Compensation Board in the past around the administrative management of the board. And as the governor worked through the past several years to try to bring some cogency and some order to the administrative management of the board, we found that we had primarily, that really no one was to blame for that in specific the problems we were having, but rather in statute we had given the board a mission impossible. Any organizational expert will tell you that if you have management by committee, it's impossible really to hold accountability in an administrative sense, because no one person then is accountable for any particular action, and there's been a lot of talk about the politicization of the administration of the board, and I think that's actually what had happened there, insofar as any administrative decision that was taken would then foster a lot of talk between various board members and between various employees, and then ultimately everything would be thrown into confusion once again. So what this bill does, very simply, is provides a way for the legislature and the governor and ultimately the people of Oregon to hold the board accountable for its administrative actions. It says that the chair of the board will be the public member. That public member will be appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate in that capacity, and the chair of the board will then be the administrative officer for the board. So it places responsibility for administrative decisions in the board squarely in one person's hands, and then holds that person accountable, or places that person in a position where they can be held accountable by the governor and by the legislature. It also clarifies that board members can be relieved of their position midterm, but still protects their autonomy to rule on the substance of the cases that come before them. And it takes one other step, as you have heard, and that is it changes the process for dismissal of an ALJ from one in which a dismissal would have to be done by an agency outside the Workers' Compensation Board into one in which the dismissal can take place within the board, but it still must be for cause, and also must then the person who is dismissed would still have the right to appeal that dismissal to an independent third party. For all these reasons, we believe that that Senate Bill 654 is a good bill and should be passed, and would appreciate your support.
Thank you very much. Questions? One, please, Chair. What's the history of how many ALJs have actually been dismissed? I mean, is this
Mr. Chair, Representative Lundquist, have with me at the witness stand Maureen Baugh, who is currently serving as the chair and public member on the board. I'd like to ask her to answer that.
Thank you.
Representative Lundquist and members of the committee. I'm Maureen Bach. I am the chair of the Workers' Compensation Board. I believe the last time that the board tried to dismiss an ALJ was 30-some years ago, shortly after the board was formed. We have no recent history of doing that.
Could you speak louder, please? We can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. There is no recent history of the board trying to dismiss an ALJ for cause.
Thank you.
Then what's that?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark, you support the bill as it was originally written or as it is amended?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morissette, we support the bill as it is amended.
So you support the idea that the chair can remove the ALJ?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morissette, that is correct. I think it is important to make clear that if there was any way that we believed an ALJ could be intimidated relative to the substantive decisions an ALJ has to make, that we would not support this. But there is clear provision in the statute that any dismissal of an ALJ must be for cause, and there are specific malfeasance and efficiency and so on and so forth, specific reasons that have to be met. So we believe that there is a firewall between the substantive decision that the ALJ must make and rule on, and we want them to be entirely autonomous in that regard. But we believe, as executive branch employees, as folks who work within an agency, that they should be held accountable for efficiency, for the way their conduct, professional conduct with other employees in the agency, and various other workplace behaviors.
You don't see a conflict then between the administrative branch moving a judicial acting part of that branch? You don't see a conflict?
Chair, Representative Moore, we do not. Essentially, I think one could argue that many of the decisions that are made administratively, well, let me back up just a step or two. The workers' compensation system is an agreement essentially to substitute, in many ways, to substitute administrative procedures for what would otherwise be very prolonged litigious encounters between employees and employers. Insofar as this is clearly one of the ways in which we have streamlined the system and it works to benefit both employers and employees by quickening the way in which resolution can be reached on disagreements, we think that it's reasonable to have this done as it is clearly an administrative procedure, even though it does replace a court procedure. It is now an administrative procedure by agreement among the parties and enactment and statute. And so we don't see a fundamental there. There is two additional appeals, obviously, or three, I suppose, available. If there's disagreement continued, if disagreement continues on the substantive issue, then the appeal can be made to the full board and thereafter to the Court of Appeals. So there still is access to the courts for remedy as well.
Thank you very much. Do you have more testimony like that?
Actually, I've submitted written testimony, Mr. Chair, and I would urge you all to read that. I won't take up any more of your time going through that and reading it to you. I think that's insulting, so I will submit that.
Thank you very much. Mr. Witt.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Brad Witt, Secretary Treasurer of the Oregon AFL-CIO, appearing before you today in support of Senate Bill 654. I, too, will be very brief. This is one of those bills that seems long, long overdue. It's, when you take a look at it, rather surprising that this change wasn't made some time ago. I think that all of us might agree that management by committee is not always the most effective nor efficient means of running an organization. And from an organizational standpoint, this is highly appropriate. We somewhat affectionately refer to this as the sled team bill, and we think that it's important that all the sled dogs are lined up in the same direction. They're all pulling in the same direction, and if Chair Bach will excuse me for putting it in these terms, that everyone knows who the lead sled dog is. So a good bill should pass. Thank you very much.
Thank you. How many you like to make now?
I won't say anything about the who never changes. Thank you very much.
Any further questions of these witnesses? Thank you very much. Lisa Russell and Chris Davey. Go ahead when you're ready.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Lisa Trussell with Associated Oregon Industries here in support of Senate Bill 654. We believe it furthers the efforts that began at the board last year when they had a management review consultant come in. We think that it clarifies who's actually responsible for the operation of the board rather than, as the statute had indicated, the board running the agency. This sometimes when you have multiple bosses, it's difficult, as Brad used the analogy of pulling a sled. This clarifies that the chair is in charge of the operations of the board. As the aspect of the terminations of ALJs, it allows them an appeal to the Employment Relations Board if they believe that their termination was unjust. So we're supportive of Senate Bill 654 and would hope for a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. Hey, Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I'm Chris Favey of the State Corporation. I'd just like to speak briefly in support of Senate Bill 654 and specifically on this issue of judicial independence of the ALJs. Just like to make it clear that the ALJs, well, the Workers' Compensation Board still remains an independent body under this bill. It doesn't bring it under DCBS or the DCBS director. The ALJs would be reporting to the chair of the Workers' Compensation Board, and under the terms of this bill, that is a public member. It's not a member that is got by a statute leaning in the direction of labor or leaning in the direction of management. It's a public member. That person is appointed by the governor and put in by the state senate. And so one has to assume that that person is going to conduct themselves with the integrity that's expected and would not attempt to influence the work of the individual ALJs. If anything like that started to happen, you've got four other members on the board. Although they don't actually have management authority under this bill, they could certainly raise the concern about something happening that didn't seem right, and certainly the ALJs would be able to raise that issue too. So I think the concerns that you've heard are unfounded, and we would support Senate Bill 654 as it's amended.
Thank you very much. Questions? Chris, I don't know if you can answer this. I may have to get Maureen back up. But if there's a decision appealed from the ALJ to the board, and the board overturn that decision, and then after that, is there another process?
Mr. Chair, an ALJ is the first level of appeal. If either party wants to appeal that, it goes before the full board, which is five members. And you go beyond that to the Court of Appeals, and then in some cases you can go to the Supreme Court if they accept the case.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. I have no one else signed up to testify on Senate Bill 654. Is there anyone who would like to testify that did not get a chance to sign up? I have one person.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, committee members. My name is Tom Bush. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon State Bar Workers' Compensation Section Executive Committee. I'm a chair of the legislative subcommittee of that section, and the Oregon State Bar Workers' Compensation Section opposes the Ingross Senate Bill 654. The reason the section opposes Senate Bill 654 is the bill places at risk the independence of the administrative law judges who handle matters regarding workers' compensation claims. The bill does so by placing with one individual the sole administrative power and authority to appoint presiding ALJs, appoint probationary ALJs, solicit material and information regarding the review and performance of probationary and non-probationary ALJs, handle complaints and comments regarding administrative law judges, and terminate the employment of administrative law judges. In effect, Senate Bill 654, as amended, allows for the public member of the board to exercise absolute control over administrative law judges without the moderation of other board members. That kind of control lends itself to control over other things, such as decisions authored by the administrative law judges. As an attorney in private practice on behalf of all practitioners who practice in this system, we require an opportunity to be heard by an impartial and unbiased finder of fact. None of us wants an administrative law judge to write a decision that is potentially colored in any way by the fear of administrative authority. Bill 654, as amended, would allow the same person who controls administrative law judges' administrative functions to make determinations regarding the discipline or termination of an administrative law judge. If passed, Senate Bill 654, as amended, would have a dramatic chilling effect on the independence of administrative law judges. We're not creating a better environment by Senate Bill 654 as amended in the workers' compensation litigation system or the system itself if we increase this potential for control or influences on decision-making processes by administrative law judges. The section urges that the current version of 654 not pass. In my handwritten comments and testimony I provided on behalf of the section, several amendments to Senate Bill 654. Thank you for your opportunity to testify today. I've been happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Questions? Quiet group today. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I now have no one else signed, and I apologize. I thought you had testified earlier. I didn't realize you had signed up. Is there anyone else who would like to testify in this bill? Seeing no one, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 654. Open a work session on Senate Bill 654. Members, Representative,
no.
What's that? Before we move this bill, I was asked by Representative Maddox to have a chance to either testify in person or submit written testimony to the committee, and he is in the middle of his committee right now, and apparently he wasn't able to get away in order to come down and testify and submit written testimony. So I don't want to move the bill today. I want to give him a chance to submit his comments or express his concerns. So we do have, I think the amendment is a conflict amendment. Is that right, Mr. Putman? Okay, Representative Morissette.
Well, I appreciate the fact that we're not going to move this bill today with what I feel is an absolutely atrocious amendment. It breaks the barrier between the judicial and the executive branch, and an administrative law judge is a judicial, it's a judicial function, and I think this is clearly breaking that, and I don't think there is a firewall that would separate them, and we need more time, and I would like to consider personally some of the other amendments that were offered to this bill, so I do appreciate the fact that we're not going to move it today.
Noted. Any further discussion? We will close the work session on Senate Bill 654. We will hold that bill over for either later this week or... Okay, with that, we are going into a work session on Senate Bill 700. Pretty good, Bill.
Anybody leave?
Mr. Chairman, this bill requires that persons who sell or offer to sell guns at a gun show either have a license under federal law or that sale go through a license. The bill defines a gun show, and it requires the overseer of the show, the establishment, the landlord, if you will, to make sure the provisions of the law are carried out. Failure to do so is a Class A misdemeanor. And it also says that if the person who sells lacks the license or doesn't sell through a licensed dealer, they are also guilty of a Class A misdemeanor. It prohibits the sale of firearms at flea markets, but does allow firearm sales at garage sales under limited circumstances.
Thank you.
Again, Canoe.
Mr. Chair, I'll move Senate Bill 700 to the floor without recommendation.
Representative Canoe moves Senate Bill 700 to the floor without recommendation. Discussion.
I'd like to add an amendment, dash 14 amendments, to allow the 503C3.
We have a motion before us that that motion for amendment is out of order.
Okay.
And the motion before us, which is to move Senate Bill 700 to the floor without recommendation. Representative Morissette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm very pleased, and I appreciate the support to move this bill out of committee. This is a bill crying to be heard publicly. Polls show that the majority of Oregonians support closing this loophole. I think it would be a grave injustice if we did not air this publicly. Whether or not it passes the floor, I think, will depend on arguments that are given in mail that people receive. This is not an anti-gun bill. This bill simply closes a loophole, make sure that the same law that applies to a gun dealer in a shop applies to a gun show. It's really a very small step, and I just don't see it as being anti-gun. I think gun ownership is fine. It doesn't infringe upon the rights of law-abiding citizens. It only helps keep guns out of the hands of people who should not have guns for whatever reason. It has been documented that three of the weapons that were used in the Littleton massacre were purchased at a gun show. I've read that in three different publications. And so that is a threat, and I think that particularly in the larger metropolitan areas, it's a greater problem than the smaller areas. So I appreciate the opportunity to move this bill to the floor of the House and where we can adequately debate it on the merits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Representative Morissette that this is a very important bill, and it does close that loophole, but I would respectfully ask the representative who made the motion to please withdraw the motion so that we can discuss the amendments on the bill. I believe that the amendments actually help the bill in a lot of ways, and they would be an improvement, and would make that request of Representative Canope.
I'm not withdrawing my motion.
Gardner?
Mr. Chair, I guess then I will not support the motion to move it forward without that, because we would like to look at these amendments.
For the discussion. Mr. Chair, one point of clarification, maybe from the staff.
Go ahead. Yes.
Like to know the and maybe the
Ramona's here.
Ramona's here as well. If this motion fails, is there an option then for another motion?
I don't know the answer, Representative.
Yeah. Representative Lundquist,
and so, yes.
That's my knowledge. If we are in work session still, there is that option. So, okay, so make absolutely clear that, I guess, now a question to you. If this motion fails, then we could have a motion, an amendment on the bill or whatever.
We are still in work session.
Say that again.
If we are still in work session.
Okay, so what you're saying is that you can close the gavel and
I can close the work session as soon as this motion is voted on.
Ms. Thompson, did you have a...
Mr. Chair, the process works in government. It works when we're allowed to speak and have public hearings. And I realize that you're upset over the fact that we went directly to work session. I would have hoped to have had public hearing at this point.
Representative Thompson, you had that opportunity to ask me for a public hearing. You chose not to. The letter I received specifically said to work session. This is exactly what you asked for.
Mr. Chair, though, it has been the custom of this committee.
Representative Gardner, this is the custom of this committee has been to do what the majority of the committee wants, and that's what the majority of the committee asked for was a work session.
It has been the custom of this committee to allow testimony even in work session, though, on several bills.
We have a motion in front of us now. To the discussion?
Mr. Chair, your call. I would request a 5-minute recess.
Representative, is that in form of a motion?
Well, I don't know if I can do that in form of the other motion.
That,
I'm not just
that motion would be in order. It is takes precedence over a motion on a bill. Is that correct, Ramona?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll request a 10-minute recess.
Representative Lundquist asks for or moves for a 10-minute recess. Is that well, a voice vote or without objection? Without objection? So ordered. 10-minute recess. I would like to, before committee members leave, I'd like to advise them that if a quorum of the committee members cannot gather to discuss this issue, like
absolutely
not in public, yeah. We will come back at 9:35.
Good count.
Good count.